You are now listening to Spoilery Radio.
Hey, howdy, welcome in everybody. My name is Mason Fields, and this is Back to the Spoiler, where we take a look back at some of the best and worst superhero, sci-fi, and fantasy films of the past 50 years, right here on Spoilery Radio. Tonight's movie was, at the time of its release, the biggest box office opening in history. It was a highly anticipated sequel to a smash hit original, and it featured the returning director and a returning star to the title role. Add two more stars as new villains and give Tim Burton a blank check, and you get 1992's Batman Returns, tonight on Back to the Spoiler. All right, joining me tonight, the big A, Cousin Alec himself. How you doing, cuz?
Doing great, excited for the movie. Let's get into it.
All right. Well, we're going to jump right on into it. First question for you. Once again, I keep having you on for movies that I feel like we watched a lot together as a kid. I've got some pretty specific memories of this one once again. But tell me, do you remember the first time you saw this movie?
I was trying to go back into it. And honestly, there's like a little bit of me that thinks I was the first time that we watched this. I was scarred a little bit by just how... Like, it has such a dark Tim Burton. They really let Tim Burton go this one. They really let him go, which now I love. But I was trying to come up with old memories, and I feel like they're kind of blocked out. Like, the first time I can remember watching it, I'm like 16, and we're rewatching it because the fourth Batman movie's coming out, and I've got it on VHS or something.
You know, some of it on this rewatch, you know, I'd really get the you'd cut to a certain scene with the clowns or something, and I'd be like, oh, I kind of tuned this part out because I found it pretty upsetting as a kid. You know?
Yeah.
Some of that.
Yeah, stuff. the red triangle gang was no joke.
Yes. That's not a. Yeah, I have pretty specific memories of watching this. Now, of course, this movie came out in the summertime, but it's such a Christmas movie, you know.
Yeah, Tim Burton and Christmas, you know. I've watched more movies, and every time it's got something. Every one of his movies, I don't know what he's got against Santa Claus.
And they're like, so, you know, Tim, what do you got for a big summer blockbuster? My first idea, Christmas, you know. And it's actually one of my kind of favorite Christmas movies, actually. It's in kind of that that pantheon because it's just such a vibe thing for me. You know, the snow and the zoo and all that kind of stuff. But no, I have some pretty specific memories of actually watching this on video because, of course, you know, summer movie was hitting VHS that Christmas, right?
Yep.
And so I remember watching the hell out of this actually at your house that Christmas. This would have been, I think it was like a house y'all were renting kind of over by the tollway.
Brookshire.
Yeah,
when we were, don't bring that up to my parents. That's a dark time we don't talk about, but it's still, well, I think that my parents' marriage survived that 9 month stretch is the biggest testament to them.
Well, it was a great time for us because not only did we get Batman Returns, but I'm pretty sure, I don't know if it was the first Sega Genesis, but I remember we played the hell out of Sonic the Hedgehog that Christmas as well.
That would have been right at the same time. Yeah, I got the Sega.
Yeah, so once again, very specific.
Uncle Jay's still mad at me for beating him at Madden as a small child. So that's one of my Christmas memories from that time.
I never could, but yeah, I just remember, you know, I'm sure we both got some Batman toys for Christmas that year.
Yeah.
And then there was also a video game. I kind of think it was like a Super Nintendo or maybe even NES Batman Returns video game that we were playing a lot that Christmas as well. All right, let me just run through the sort of the stats of all this. So once again, this is directed by Tim Burton. He directed Edward Scissorhands between Batman and Batman Returns. And it was kind of a – he did Edward Scissorhands as like a, well, I just need kind of something to fill the project. And it was kind of a surprise hit. So it really got Burton more leverage going into the negotiations about Batman Returns. Apparently he originally really didn't want to do Batman Returns. But the producers from the first movie basically gave him free rein. Like, all right, hey, if you come back, make it as Burton, you just Burton, Ebert, you know?
Yeah, I think that Edward Scissorhands was such a hit, both critically, and it made a lot more money than something that costs so little should have. But they were like, all right, you know, now that we're bringing Batman and it did well, Batman did well toy-wise the first time, let him go. He was the Hollywood hotshot. They were just like, yeah, no, he's untouchable right now. It's well, they got a Tim Burton movie.
Yeah,
they got what they asked for.
This is one of the most Burton-y Burtons, you know. And Edward Scissorhands are really in that that Burton,
absolutely,
that Burton sweet spot there. So the story written by Sam Hamm, who wrote a very weird script about a treasure hunt. So Burton brought in Daniel Waters to write the film. This was the writer of such 80s hits like Heathers, you know, a lot of that kind of arch female villain kind of energy. That Waters was really bringing it to it. Alec, I'm curious, do you know about some of the sort of casting controversies surrounding this film?
You know, I was had the pleasure of reading some of it today, and the one that I cannot get over, because, and it's one of those, like, when someone tells you that Will Smith was supposed to play Neo in The Matrix, you're like, that would have ruined the movie, even though I like Will Smith, is that Annette Bening was signed on to be Catwoman.
Yeah.
But she got pregnant, and so they couldn't do the filming. And so they went to their number two in Michelle Pfeiffer.
Right.
Who is Catwoman. Like, I feel like that's the iconic Catwoman. Iconic. Unless you're a fan of the old Julie Foundry from the Adam West TV show.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not talking about Halle Berry or Hathaway. Like, it's definitely Michelle Pfeiffer.
I think she's my MVP on this rewatch, to be honest. I mean, you know, DeVito is hamming it up as the Penguin. We'll talk a lot about that. But But Pfeiffer's Catwoman is, you know, she's like embodying a cat without doing, you know, cats, you know, like she's not doing the little walk, but there's just something about her posture and everything that is just.
She really embraces the feline nature, the physicality of a feline, and the whip and the leather. And there's still, like, I think she brings a real powerful feminine imagery, which is what Catwoman's supposed to be. She's supposed to be empowered woman.
Yeah, don't like overly sexualize her. I mean, there's some weird sexual energy through a lot of this movie, but you don't have those like Zack Snyder, you know, shot at Wonder Woman's ass kind of stuff.
Yeah, okay. The Josh Whedon poster where for some reason Scarlett Johansson is facing away, but everyone else is looking forward.
Yes, exactly.
Burton never went down that path, thankfully.
Yeah, exactly. So in the screenwriting, there's a bunch of the casting stuff. Yes, you're right. Annette Bening was cast as Catwoman, got pregnant, had to drop out. Sean Young, who was supposed to be Vicki Vale in the first one and had an injury on set when they were filming a horseback riding scene at Wayne Manor, decided she wanted to play Catwoman, so she made a Catwoman suit and broke onto the Warner Brothers lot, you know, thinking that the sort of legendary Hollywood kind of antics would get her the role.
So she's committing to that method a little early.
Yeah.
You gotta get the part before you can start method acting.
Exactly. Spoiler alert, she didn't get the part. So it's kind of that.
Didn't work.
Kind of a.
Props for trying. I like, you know, if you want something, go and get it. But I guess not the one.
So Sean Young diverted to, you know, Ace Ventura 1 around this time, I guess, after that.
Never really came back after Blade Runner. You did great in Blade Runner. Yeah. That's what we got.
And then, of course, one of the familiar faces from the first film that is notably not returning here in the second one, Billy Dee Williams, is Harvey Dent. There's really no other way to slice it. The studio was basically like, yeah, sorry, we're not letting a black guy play Two-Face. They let it go in the first one because they really weren't thinking, oh, this is going to be a franchise and a sequel. It was like kind of just an Easter egg, you know, oh, call him Harvey Dent and all that.
There are internet rumors of that Tim Burton had thoughts of a trilogy where Billy Dee Williams would become Two-Face for the third villain.
Right.
That script exists out there somewhere. But
the script for this because Shrek was supposed to be a Harvey Dent. And the deal at the end when Catwoman kills Shrek with the little taser gun thing and it gets electrocuted, that was supposed to be like the genesis of Two-Face.
Yeah.
But they scrapped all that. And so we're like, yeah, we're going to go a different direction. Sorry, Billy D. Some other kind of controversial casting issues around this film. It actually had Robin in it at one point.
Yeah, and he got paid for it too, which is my favorite part of that story.
Marlon Wayans got paid a lot of money not to be in Batman, Batman Returns. They actually went so far as to have toys made that looked like Marlon Wayans. And after they fired him, I don't know who, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, Kenner, whoever the toy line was, basically painted the Marlon Wayans toys white, noticeably with a high top fade, and released them as comic book toys, you know?
Oh boy.
So, yeah, a lot of,
yeah. Apparently Tim Burton, which in comic books, I mean, we've gone through those casting controversies plenty of times in terms of race changing from page to screen. But Tim Burton was not one to worry about race for a character, I guess, because he had Billy Dee and he was ready to do Marlon Wayans. And Marlon Wayans has been quoted as well saying that Burton had told him that he had a third movie in mind and that he was going to come in to be Robin for the third one.
Oh, wow. Okay.
When if they had let Tim Burton do a trilogy, that he wanted Marlon to come and be Robin in that one.
Which is kind of funny. I mean, I was just talking about how he didn't want to come back to do the second one, but they gave him all this free reign. Because he got to make it as Burton as he wanted, after the fact, he was like, you know what, guys, this was fun. I'll come back for the third. And the studio was like, no, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a great Tim Burton discussion quote in a documentary, Shadow of the Bat. I don't know if you've ever watched that, but I highly recommend it to listeners and you. It's about a creation of a lot of the Batman movies. Shadow of the Bat is what it's called.
I think I may have seen parts of this. Is this where they reveal like they did like an animatronic Michelle Pfeiffer for that last scene? I think was in there somewhere.
That's in there. Yeah. And it's just a lot of the production stuff from the early Batman foursome. But Tim Burton talking about it, he said, I'm gonna get the quote wrong, but he basically went in and the producers were very Hollywood like, well, you know, we could talk about that, or, you know, if you really feel that you want, because he was still sitting somewhere in the middle of like a four movie deal with Warner Brothers.
Oh, okay.
But because this full Tim Burton did not have the after sales that they were hoping for, like the first Batman did, they wanted to go a different direction.
The by the numbers,
he picked up on it.
Yeah, the by the numbers on this I thought was kind of interesting. The first one cost about $50 million and made over $400 million. And so, of course, the studio's like, hey, here's a great idea. Batman, again, let's do it. So they upped the budget a little bit, up to about $80 million, but the box office gross did not follow that. So the movie dropped on June 16th, 1992, with a budget of $80 million, opening weekend $45 million, up barely just a little bit from the first one's $40 million. But the worldwide gross was down to 266 from that 411. So not the smash hit that Warner Brothers was expecting, similar to that first one.
And then on top of that, you had the aftermarket toy sales that just didn't keep up. Because as dark as Burton went with the Penguin and Catwoman, they weren't making a lot of action figures that actually looked like that and putting them in McDonald's Happy Meals.
Right. Well, I didn't remember it at the time, but apparently there was a big backlash on this because it was like too scary for kids, way too weird, barely any Batman in it. You know, parents were like, there was like marches in the streets at McDonald's trying to like shut down these toys and stuff.
Yeah, you know, those memories, we just remember the movie. We don't remember the controversy at that point. Lucky the innocence of youth, I guess. But yeah, reading about that stuff, I feel like that's really where Tim Burton lost his chance to get to a third movie.
Yeah.
Was that Burton just isn't that kind of marketable.
Especially on the first one, the toy sales being such a big deal of that with Joker and Nicholson getting a huge piece of Joker merchandise and all that.
Yeah, and that's the crazy part about Joker is Jack Nicholson's Joker is terrifying. Like if you listen and watch his actions and words, he's terrifying.
Yeah.
But because he's bright purple and looks like a clown, the parents that didn't watch the movie are like, yeah, give my kid this homicidal clown toy. That's fine.
He didn't have black bile dripping out of his mouth.
Yeah.
I guess that's all right. All right. Well, let's dive right into the plot. We're going to kind of walk through this a little more chronologically than we usually do, but just throw out your awards on the way along the way. And cousin, stop me if you want to get on anything before I blow past it. So the movie opens. I had forgotten about this long opening at Cobblepot Manor. I kind of just remembered the bassinet, you know, and the credits and all that. But the movie opens with Paul Rubens in a monocle. Interesting flex from our guy Burton. Of course, he had directed Pee Wee's Big Adventure, so he and Paul Rubens were pretty tight. But it was like, oh, shit, Pee Wee. I forgot.
Yeah. What is he doing here?
And once again, you know, it's this pan up on this huge, like, castle-esque manor. And, you know, you know Bruce Wayne lives in some similar digs, and you're just kind of like, man, how many of these, like, Citizen Kane-esque Xanadu things are out there in Gotham?
Well, Gotham City, known for its Gothic architecture, I guess that makes sense, you know?
I suppose.
But, yeah.
And then I just thought, you know, we basically hear a baby crying and then the dad, Paul Rubens, kind of slowly walking down the hall. And I never picked up on this as a kid, but like you see the doctor kind of coming out of the delivery room, like covering his mouth, like
like he's going to throw up. He looks like he's going to throw up.
Oh, my God, that baby's got flippers. Just, oh, my God, your child's so disgusting.
That's my kind of doctor. I wish we'd had that at the birth of my kids.
And then we get these kind of quick, like, almost montage shots of how creepy this little kid is. It's Christmas time, but they've got this little, like, safe, cage, basically.
It's just like, you don't know, I don't know what you locked him in, but they're, you know, feeding him slowly through the cage.
And of course, I'm like, well, man, that's maybe a little overreaction for a kid with flippers, but then he fucking sucks the cat into the cage and I guess eats it.
That's the implication. So, you know, he comes out an animal, apparently. Or at least with very strange eating habits, which continue throughout the film.
Yeah, they continue. I guess at that point, his parents are just like, that's it. We're getting rid of this kid. I thought it was interesting too. Like it's such a weird kind of shot when they go to this little bridge to drop the baby over it. And I'm like, that is a very shallow, slow moving creek. You know what I mean? It's not exactly, you know,
of
Moses.
All the places you could have picked, maybe you should have done it like in the family creek in the backyard. Yeah. I don't know if that's going to work out for you.
But of course, this little creek meanders through all the sewers of Gotham, which are these vast, cavernous, also much Gothic architecture down under the city as well. I don't think this ever jumped out to me quite as much as it did this time. We get the cut to Gotham City 33 years later, portrayed by a 50-year-old Danny DeVito at this time. I don't know. You know, it's one of those, like, you didn't need to put a X number of years later. We got it.
Yeah, you know? We'll figure it out. You know, we don't need an exact timeline. We'll be fine.
And I'm really wondering if that was like, why 33 years? And I, you know, did some digging and it's like, well, that's the, you know, something about Christ. So yeah, let's Christ imagery when it comes to the Penguin.
Yeah. Well, you know, he continues, you can tell Tim Burton went to Catholic school. That's what I'm convinced of.
I mean, you got the Moses, you know, Moses.
The firstborn sons, the Penguin's coming after later. Like this guy, some old priest made him read the Bible a lot, and he's going to use it to torture fans later on in life.
I
laughed when, you know, we're talking about when the kids floating away down the river while I was watching as a prep for this one. It reminded me, just in terms of juxtaposition, to the prep for Hook, where we also have a baby rolling away from their parents, though it's in a much more accidental.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's like if only the Penguin had been picked up by Tinkerbell instead of this family of Penguins, maybe life would have been a lot different in Gotham. I don't know.
Bangarang!
Yeah, he lost his marbles.
Man, I don't know what was in the ether in, you know, 91, 92, but yeah, a lot of...
What is happening? What are these kids? Nobody's paying attention to their children. They're just rolling off.
Particularly these semi-Victorian parents of the time, these rich Victorian parents
are really
bad with their kids. All right, so then we get to modern day Gotham. We're starting to try to do this, the first attempt at lighting this goddamn Christmas tree. the first of several. And of course, here we meet Max Schreck, portrayed by Christopher Walken.
Oh, Christopher Walken did everything. I love. He's, I can't help it.
He's really good in this. I mean,
yeah,
and not in a caricature-y kind of way either. There's a few little moments, like particularly right before he pushes Selena out the window, and he's kind of playing with her.
The quote I had written the quote down. It's like, no, that's exactly what I'm going to do. And he's just like, what are you going to do? Murder me? Yeah. But he's just so nonchalant to the villain. I love it.
He does the little like, I was just playing. No, I'm really going to push you. Yeah. You know, and not to get too controversial political with this stuff, but I think it's been well documented. There's a little bit of one Donald Trump and Mr. Max Schreck. A titan of business with a really bad haircut.
Yeah, there's some connections. And, you know, I think Burton's more goes after the social outcast as opposed to the economic, you know, classism. But there's definitely a distrust among these artists for guys at the top, right?
Oh, 100%. And, you know, it's kind of funny looking at the film as a whole. Really, it's Schreck is the bad guy. I mean, yes, Penguin's kind of evil, but even Penguin, he loads a lot of sympathy onto Penguin. You know, Batman, Catwoman, Penguin, they're all kind of these misunderstood freaks. Yeah. You know, in Burton's mind, Schreck is the big bad.
The villain, yeah. Tim Burton, I think, would have no problem going to get lunch with Penguin. He would just make sure his nose wasn't anywhere close. Yes.
Get a little raw fish, you know.
Yeah, it's fine.
So a giant Christmas present drives into the, you know, kind of 30 Rock of Gotham City here. Bad guys, freaks, you know, jump out. A lot of clowns. Kind of our first action sequence of the movie, if you want to call it that, though it was amazing rewatching it going like, there's not really like, it's an action sequence without any action really. Like there's some slight pushing.
Yeah. It was like, I think Batman pushed one of them and he fell down real hard, but that was about all that I saw.
And that was the comical thing too, about the villains is like, they're like harassing people, just kind of running up to them going, rah, 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 you know, they're not really hurting anybody. You know, and I
still don't get, just, you know, when we're looking at it and the disconnects and makeup, why clowns? Why?
That was my next note, cousin. I think the branding is a little confused here, you know?
They were just like, did they think all gangs were clowns and Penguin had just taken over?
So the last movie, the guy's a clown, but all his thugs are basically gangsters. In this movie, the Penguin, who in the comics is the gangster, they make his whole gang clowns. So I think it's just Burton like kind of wanting to go back to that goofiness.
I think he just likes the imagery of scary clowns. Yeah. Like, I think he just thinks they are scary. You're right, Burton. I'm not disagreeing. It's just, there's a pretty famous clown. I don't know if you remember that movie you directed a couple years ago. But.
And of course, it makes him even creepier.
It's just off-brand for me.
When you throw in Vincent Schiavelli as a creepy organ grinder with a sinister monkey and a Gatling gun and a Christmas.
Yeah, well, every time he turns up, you know something bad's going to happen.
And of course, this is where we cut to Bruce Wayne sitting at home alone in the dark, just kind of waiting for some action. it never jumped out to me before, but at the moment where the bat signal lights up the sky. And then the Wayne Manor bat signals all like converge and shoot bat signals through his window.
He's got a mirror set up on the premises somehow that gets it out of the sky and shoots it in there. Very impressive.
Well, but sorry, Bruce, anybody that's driving down that little farm to market road you live on is going to go, why are there a bunch of Batman spotlights on that house?
That's weird.
Might look into that a little bit.
It's probably nothing.
Let's see. We talked about, I'm kind of all over the place here. So in this, first little attack, Max Schreck is taken captive by the Penguin, taken back to his little Arctic world lair. Cause as creepy as the Penguin is, I always loved his little hideout when we were kids. I think anytime it was like a water park kind of thing, it was like, oh, cool. You know?
Yeah, no, it's a great Burton set, I think, where, like, you know, he really got into the design details and everything, the background and the penguins that are just kind of sliding around. And,
just hanging out.
Yeah, and then it's just like weird clown people having lunch, and then, well, Max Schreck is getting interrogated or blackmailed here.
Yeah, basically blackmailed, and this is the part where the Penguin is like, he says something to the effect of, what you put down your toilet, I hang on my mantle. It's like, really? Okay, I didn't pick up on that. So you're sifting through people's shit, Oswald, is what you're telling me. You know, of course, he's already taped back together all the incriminating documents. So, yeah, he's blackmailing Shrek. Let's go ahead and talk about it now. Let's talk about this fucking penguin man. So, first of all, the baby onesie that he's wearing, I think has to be my nipples on a bat suit award for just wild costume decision.
It was very strange.
And my question is, like, is that the same little onesie he was wearing as a baby? And that's, like, why he turned into a penguin man is because, like,
he's never taken his clothes off,
yeah,
right?
He's never taken his
clothes. Because it looks the same as he just been buying the largest onesie he could find that came down the toilet. People were flushing their clothes.
And it is so gross looking. It's got these kind of, they're not shit stains, but it's all sooty and just.
Yeah. You know, so they tried to make it look like he was living in the sewer. They did not clean him up at all. This is, and the goo in his mouth, the black saliva,
which
I read was apparently a choice by Danny DeVito. He just did it without asking before they came into a scene.
Oh, you know, Burton loved it though. Burton was
I'm sure Burton ate it up. He was like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
But he had to squirt it into his mouth. It was a mixture of like black squid ink and mouthwash that he just had to put into his mouth before talking every time.
Oh, that's awful.
And so this is one of the tough points for me as a fan of the comics, because in the comics, the penguin is like a gentleman of leisure that just happens to have a big nose.
Right.
That's why they call him the penguin.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And
he doesn't have flippers, as I recall.
Yeah, he doesn't have flippers. He's not living in the sewers. He's got weird umbrellas, but that's the only connection that they have between the two.
Yeah.
So this is it goes a little. I'll agree with you with the nipples on a bat suit. That just the overall costume for the penguin is a little too much.
Yeah.
For me,
it's just so nasty.
Yeah.
And then of course we go back to Selena Kyle's apartment for the first time. Now this is before she's all Catwoman'd out. So, you know, she's kind of doing this, kind of talking to herself through the third person with her cat.
Yeah. Talking about her cats with her cats.
And I never noticed what she was saying to these cats as a kid, or at least I didn't understand it. She's basically like, she says to the cat, "Oh, back from more sexual escapades."
And she says these alley cats that she's apparently raising are quite the harlots.
Yeah, it's like, well, if you were chipping in instead of stepping out, you fucking whore cat.
It might be a little nicer in here.
But then, of course, she realizes she forgot Shrek's speech at the office or something to that effect. So she runs back to the office. And for some reason,
loyal employee, Selena Kyle.
Yeah, but she decides in the middle of the night to like break into some secret file for some reason. And then, of course, Shrek shows up and is like, "What are you doing?" And she's on to his little power plant scheme, so he throws her out a window.
It is the interaction between the two of them is one of the best parts of the whole movie, I think, in that scene between Christopher Walken. And at that point, the completely defeated Selena Kyle, then her resurrection where the cats come and get her on the street, which is a little weird. I really like the filming of it where you just the cats start to appear like Savior Batman themselves just from the corners and run to her.
Yeah, kind of the shadows on the wall.
You see the long cat shadows come up and start to, you know, I don't know, magic cat power. I don't know how that all works, but
yeah, that's
it
still
brings her back.
A little bit of like a wait. So cats lick her and she gets nine lives or something.
Well, yeah, that's the recurring theme through it. You know, it's you're the second guy to throw me out of a window this week, but don't worry, I still have seven lives. You know, she dies again with the shocking later. And it's all right. I guess she's down to five at this point. I don't know. We got to keep track here.
Yeah, I want to talk about some of how those lives work exactly. At
the I need a little more
information.
Is it
lives or bullets? I'm not sure. But yeah, so at that point, Selena gets up and just returns home. And, you know, I really like her coming back, you know, all disoriented. And she kind of, you know, she pours a little milk for the cat, but spills it everywhere and then just starts chugging it.
Yeah.
I thought all that was really good.
This whole transition from Selena Kyle, the defeated employee, to Catwoman is great. And as you said before, you know, she's just the I think she's the best character in the movie.
Yeah.
And she really commits to that transformation scene in this one.
And the thing that really sets her off, and once again, I never picked this up before, but it's another one of those little like solicitations on her answering machine. And boy, we're in a different world, but I guess early 90s, it's this solicitation like, ladies, if you wear this perfume, maybe your boss will ask you to stay late for a hot dinner. It's like, oh boy, we have different.
This is advertising was a little different.
Yeah, it's basically advertising with sexual harassment kind of built into the brand. It's a little weird.
That's what you're hoping for. Yeah. That's why you became a secretary, right? Exactly.
Way to go, Don Draper, on that ad campaign there.
Nailed it.
And of course, we get she starts smashing stuff up. I just love that, like, her, the first thing that she does after, of course, shredding all of her stuffed animals is like, I gotta sew. Like, she doesn't even know she has powers yet, really. And she's like, ooh, I'm gonna start cutting up this leather jacket and making a sexy
outfit. It's such an intense sewing. Like, she can't be good at sewing because her fingers are bleeding. And,
yes.
And
it's,
you know, like, does she ever actually hit the material, or is she just going through her thumb the whole time? It's like bloody and visceral. And, conveys a lot of, you know, her change, I guess, but it's, man, it's hard to watch.
And she just starts, you know, spray painting shit black randomly, which I thought was like, man, your superintendent's going to be pissed. You are not getting your deposit back on this apartment. So,
well, the number of cats she had, I don't think she was gonna have to pay for a cleaning anyway. There's no apartment in Gotham City that's okay with 37 cats, to my knowledge.
Right? Yeah, pet deposit, big time on that one.
Yeah, big time.
And then we get to another little, it's not another lighting ceremony, but it's kind of another pre-lighting ceremony with the mayor. Mayor's up on some steps giving a speech, and a creepy clown starts doing some backflips up to the mayor. And I'm just like, you all see this creepy clown backflipping towards the mayor. And remember, there was a clown that just killed everybody.
The memory in Gotham City of its citizenry, I guess, is very short. Maybe that's why they don't remember the bat signals going to Bruce's house. Yes. They just forget to write it down. But yeah, you'd think that everyone, I'd be out of there anytime a clown showed up anywhere.
Clowns would be outlawed in Gotham. I mean, it's just,
couldn't make it.
Yeah.
There's no, it's not funny anymore. After the third mass murder, it's not funny.
No, it's really not. But the creepy clown just takes the baby basically out of his hands with this kind of like, oh, I'll take that. Thank you. And jumps down in the sewers. Of course, this is all a setup for Penguin to come in playing the hero. And we get our first like Penguin in public, you know, Shrek's kind of trying to, mooch on the PR with all of it. But then we see Bruce Wayne back at Wayne Manor watching this on the news, and like, he feels sorry for Penguin, you know, he's like, lost his parents. You know, he's like,
there's this connection and him talking with Arthur. Oh my gosh. Sorry. Alfred, Arthur, where am I? Talking with Alfred about it. And, I think those are some of the more important, lines in the movie where he's talking, you know, about it being okay for another guy like this to exist. And when Bruce starts trying to prove that he's up to no good, you know, Alfred's like, does everyone else have to be evil and you're the only good guy?
Alfred has a great line. It's, must you be the only lonely man beast in town, sir?
Yeah, that's what it, thank you. You nailed it.
Lonely man beast.
Lonely man beast.
That's one way to describe Batman.
You know, Alfred gets, I'm just saying, Alfred has zero shits given about what he says to Bruce across all Batman iterations, and I think that's the best part about Alfred.
Especially in this movie, there's a little bit of shade going back and forth between him and, you know.
They have a good relationship in this movie.
Well, who let Vicki Vale into the Batcave, Alfred? Which apparently that was actually a studio note because so many fans were like pissed off that Alfred let Vicki Vale into the Batcave in the first movie. The studio is basically like, Tim Burton, do anything you want, but make sure to get this one note in here about, you know, Alfred fucked up about Vicki Vale.
We gotta appease some fans. They're frothing at the mouth.
Yeah, exactly. And then we get a lot of this stuff with Penguin at the Hall of Records. You know, he says he's looking for his family, but what, he's just making a list of all the firstborn kids in town, I guess, is basically what he's doing.
Yeah, I think he's trying to just, you know, gather information. He claims that he's looking for his parents, prove that he's a cobblepot. And he's got the cloud list getting going and just checking names, checking names as they're going through.
And he's got the big monocle and a quill pen, I guess, Bic running around in this weird.
See, those little notes I like because that's the Penguin I think of, where he's over the top like that. But yeah, the grossness, while it fits Tim Burton to a T, that's where he loses me as a villain, as opposed to his Catwoman that I love.
And, you know, we haven't mentioned it, but the whole time, I guess this is, you know, just a DeVito acting choice. He's just doing this like, the whole movie.
Yeah. And everyone just acts like nothing's wrong with that.
Yeah, it's like this okay.
Just okay.
All right, sure.
Like Shrek is trying his best to like turn him into a gentleman. Christopher Walken, obviously who you'd want if you were getting Madame Butterfly, that'd be who I'd want to teach me. But they just let him keep being himself. There's no end to that ham for Danny DeVito in this movie. They're like, you are a disgusting man beast.
You are the grossest thing ever.
Be the grossest version of Danny DeVito.
Also extremely pervy throughout this movie, by the way.
Oh, yeah. What's the line? It's like you're the best young lady that a role model could hope for. It's real. You're the best role model. The young woman says, you're the best role model a young lady could hope for. And his response is like, well, you're the best young lady that a role model could hope for.
Yes.
It's like, whoa.
And there's
sexual harassment continues.
There's two creepy scenes like that. So the first one is when Shrek goes to see the Penguin and he's got the gift of a fresh fish. And of course, as soon as he unwraps this fish, Penguin becomes, you know, a little puppy that's just like, okay. I love the way DeVito, like, he bites into like the middle of the fish.
Yeah.
And it's just like laying over his hands the whole scene.
It reminds me of how great, and I'm going to forget his name, but the actor Andy Serkis, who does Gollum, did the same thing when he finds the raw fish and you see him kill a fish and bites into it like an animal.
Like,
both of them do a very good job of conveying just. There's no shred of humanity left in this creature. This is a wild beast, nothing else.
Penguin is kind of a golem, yeah. I just love the way this Shrek, like, uses the fish to, like, get him downstairs into the campaign headquarters. But he, like, puts his hat over his face so he, like, can't see until the, like, ta-da moment. And then Penguin, just with fish all over his face, was just like,
you got to love the confidence, and that's where I think the Trump comparison comes in well for Shrek, is to be so confident that nothing you do could go wrong, that you're just going to, like, uncage a wild animal that's eating fish in a room full of political consultants, I guess. These are the Georgetown grads that are ready to run your campaign. And you're just like, this is going to go great. Let's do a meet and greet with the guy with the flippers. It's going to be fine.
and Shrek is just like, just push through it. You know, just push through it.
Just say hi.
And of course, Penguin is savvy enough to throw out, elections happen in November. Is this not late December? And Shrek is literally like, don't worry about it.
I just changed it. It's fine.
Which, in other words, Shrek is speaking for Tim Burton there. Just like, don't think about it.
Yeah, that's a hand of God's coming in.
And then we get the little campaign advisor lady who comes in with the, let's put these little gloves on you. Research tell us that voters like fingers. I lost it at that one. That's my comedy points right there.
That is, maybe the funniest line in the whole movie.
Research tells us voters like fingers.
What was that research? Could you imagine being that guy with survey? Do you prefer people with fingers?
Fingers or without?
Does it make a difference? Makes a big difference, you know? Like, what is?
I'm finger blind. I don't see fingers, okay?
Yeah, I don't see fingers. I'm good.
And then, of course, the smarmy campaign guy makes a joke, and Penguin, they all do the ha 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 ha. And then this was the moment that most disturbed me as a kid, when Penguin bites the shit out of that guy's nose.
Yes, that is.
It just squirts.
Yeah, because they go like Scorsese with the blood, where there's not that much blood in a human face is what comes out afterwards, you know.
And Shrek's just like, guy's biting noses, whatever, it'll be fine.
Yeah, no, don't worry. We got this election wrapped up. I got it.
And of course, one of the grossest line, I think, in the movie is Shrek says something like, Oswald Cobblepot will fill the void. And then Penguin goes, I'd like to fill her void. Teach her my French flipper trick. Your French flipper trick. Okay, Penguin.
Yeah, that's something from the circus group, I think. They helped him out with that.
So I can't figure out. I mean, the whole time Penguin's doing this kind of infantile thing, and he's basically just like a horny, you know, pubescent teenager. But I guess he's got some experience if he's got the French flipper trick, you know?
Well, yeah, that's probably the most worrisome part.
Yes, it is. Don't want to picture that too much. But props for the Penguin. He does have a very progressive platform, a anti-climate change, stop global warming, start global cooling is his platform. And we get the Red Triangle Gang running around blowing up some shit. You know, we get kind of another little clumsy fight scene. This is where the little smart Batarang takes out some guys, but then the little poodle catches it. Even as a kid, I was like, okay, so you're fighting these guys. Hold on, guys. Just pause for a second. Let me blip, 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 blip. Okay, now I'm good. Throw the Batarang. Let's see, where are we? Catwoman at Shrek's department store. This is, of course, where we get the she starts whipping the mannequins. This was making the rounds on social media here a year or so ago, the kind of behind-the-scenes look at that. And Michelle Pfeiffer fucking learned how to do that.
Yeah, she nails it.
Like one take just takes the heads off the mannequins, and she knew how to work that thing.
She nailed the whip, you know? Give Harrison Ford something to look forward to. That's the whipmaster in movies is Catwoman, is Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yes. And of course the security guard is like, oh gosh, I don't know whether to open fire or fall in love. It's like such this like it's really a Batman the Animated Series kind of come to life in this movie.
Oh, sure. Sure.
And this is where Batman and Penguin come face to face for the first time. Notably, Penguin is fully dressed for the first time, not in his little baby nappy. And I never really noticed this before, but it's kind of a, like, just a chance meeting, you know? Batman comes around a corner, and there's Penguin, and, oh, Catwoman just happens to come back flipping out of the department store right behind us.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of that small world energy that we're, yes. Everybody, okay, well, we'll just let it go again. It's fine.
Though I loved, and I'd forgotten, it was so, she was laying it on so thick, but after her little backflip, she just pops up and goes, meow, and the store blows up. I mean, I've never heard anybody lay so much paprika on a single line before.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Penguin reveals his flying umbrella, which, you know, I'm like, bury the lead, man. That's cooler tech than anything Batman's got.
Yeah, he's really killing it.
So I'm wondering which of the, you know, was it the Penguins or the Triangle Gang that's building all Penguin's umbrellas for
you
him?
You know, yeah, none of them were really giving you the electrical engineer vibes when you were down in Penguin's little artillery house. But
you know, they really weren't.
He's apparently really got some munitions to work with.
And that was one of the things that, it always made perfect sense as a kid. But on this rewatch, I'm like, how the hell do these circus freaks know how to disassemble the Batmobile? You know, they've literally got like yeah. blueprints to the Batmobile. I don't think those are out there, guys.
You know, maybe it's a missing scene and they had broken into Wayne Tech earlier. You know, it's Christopher Nolan steals it later, didn't know it was a Tim Burton idea first.
Hey, if we combine our Batman continuity, we can say that Lucius Fox has just left the blueprints in the basement somewhere.
Effing Fox, man. This is why he gets demoted. You know, stop leaving it lying around.
So this is where we get our first Bat and the Cat fight. I really liked the little bit in this where the first time he hits her, she does the, how could you? I'm a woman. And Keaton sells the like, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. And she kicks him in the face. Keaton, I gotta say, I mean, Keaton is, it feels like he's barely in this movie, but I just feel like he's fucking killing it in this movie. Just all the little looks and,
there's a fun, discussion with the, you mentioned the screenwriter who came in, to repair the script for Tim Burton when he took it over, mm-hmm. Winters, he had a bunch more speaking lines for Keaton in the script because he was writing it thinking Batman is the lead.
Right.
And then Keaton would get into one of these every time there was one of these confrontations. Apparently, there was supposed to be a Batman rant, an angry rant, or a discussion of at least a little bit of the good versus evil or an indictment of bad guys. And Keaton was like, nope, Batman wouldn't say that. He's just going to start fighting. And he talks about how Keaton is the only, and at this point, I mean, superstar Michael Keaton, who just, you know, he's done Beetlejuice and this, and he's killing it. But yeah, he was pulling all of his lines out of it. He said they lost 15 minutes of Keaton dialogue that Keaton himself cut.
You know, I think he had it a lot easier on this second film. For one thing, I saw he was able to get the costume department to put a zipper in the bat suit. So, you know, he could go to the bathroom a few times a day. I read, I don't know if this is true, I couldn't get a good look at it, that he's not actually wearing bat boots in this. He's wearing Air Jordans with like a little calf cover. So between
that would be much more comfortable. Yeah.
Between that and the, like, you know, I don't want to say that line. I've also heard Keaton doing some interviews where he was like, yeah, well, what can I say? I was buying a new house that year. So, I did Batman Returns.
He's phoning it in.
Though, you know, now that he's actually returning as Batman after all this time, maybe he's changed his tune about it a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. So this is where we get, you know, Catwoman stabs Batman. Batman scars her with this little kind of acid pack he throws at her. Of course, this is all going to be how they kind of figure out who each other are later. This is the point where she falls into an open top truck, mind you, full of kitty litter. I don't think that's a thing.
Yeah, that was a stretch.
Unless there's a kitty litter factory like right around the corner, I don't know why you'd be hauling kitty litter in dump trucks like that, but whatever. So then we get the big press conference where Cobblepot officially declares his candidacy. And this is where he really grossly puts a pin on the staffer's boob, like you were talking about earlier. And you know, at that point, you would think Shrek would be like, all right, this guy is a fucking liability. He's biting people's noses. He's basically sexually harassing his staff on the first day.
Don't even blink. Max Shrek can make it work. All right. You don't know how Max Shrekian he is.
He's not even worried about it. Which, one of my favorite lines in the movie is like, Shrek's coming out of the Hall of Records and there's a cop or something asking like, Cobblepot in there, blah, blah, blah. And Shrek's like, it's Christmas. Give the Constitution a rest. It's just like, what a fucking rich guy thing to fucking
thing
say.
To say, yeah.
Yeah,
give back it a rest. Off.
Yeah. So then when Penguin goes back upstairs, this is when we get the first real exchange between Catwoman and Penguin. Once again, disturbing hearing Danny DeVito say, that's just the pussy I've been looking for.
That was the line that got me, that I was not ready for in a rewatch and had no memory of. But then Danny DeVito saying I paused the movie and laughed for a good like 2 minutes. I was like, that, no one put that in the script. Danny DeVito did that.
He is Danny so DeVito did that. That's horny improv, in this scene.
And I can't, I refuse to believe anything else. He's now famously doing his 17th season or whatever of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And I think that this Penguin role was just preparing him for that character.
Yes.
Gross old man.
Think of the naked man sliding out of the couch.
Exactly. There's a lot of crossover in opinions between the Penguin.
I once again, never registered to me as a kid. She says something about, I need some ointment. And he pulls out like KY basically. And he's unscented. This guy's a freak. Penguin is a freak.
Yeah. He's the French flinger flipper move. Apparently requires a lot of assistance.
Not to kink shame the Penguin or anything. I mean, do what you do.
Hey, do what you do. You live in the sewers. All right. I'm not going to judge you. You got to get off how you can.
So Bruce and Selina run into each other on the street. This is where Bruce basically asks her over for a date later. Meanwhile, downtown, the Penguin uses Batarang to kidnap the Vanna White tree lighter girl. And then Selina shows up for the date. They start making out, but this is when they both quickly realize, I think Oh shit, I think I'm making out with Catwoman. Oh shit, I think I'm making out with Batman. And they both just jet. And I really love the exchange between Michelle Pfeiffer and Michael Gals, Alfred. She's like, can you leave him a, what did she say? Something like, leave him like a dirty limerick or something.
Yeah.
She's like, I've got one ready.
The sexy note. I'll be good.
I just love Michael, excuse me, Alfred, just like, oh, this is just all part of the job. Master Wayne's holes, we've got to get them out of the house.
Yeah, well, you know, this one's weirder than they normally are, but it was always headed that direction.
So they both run off to the tree lighting ceremony. The Penguin's goons are able to take over the Batmobile. Again, don't really understand how that works, but sure. Batman tries to rescue the Snow Princess, but Catwoman jumps in. This is where we get this weird little kind of warehouse fight between the two of them. And I think the worst line in the movie is when he basically tosses Catwoman and says, eat floor, high fiber. It's just like, oh, that's like an Arnold line.
That's what you left in, Keaton. Of all the ones you wanted to get rid of, you were like, this is a killer. This slaps, as the kids say.
I mean, it was the 90s era of, you know, hasta la vista, baby, one-liners. Listen, and stuff.
Keaton, I love you, but you're not Arnold, all right? It does only work for certain people, and that you are an actual actor, so use actual lines, please.
Eat floor, high fiber is not one of the classics.
Not going to get it done.
And then I think this scene is weird because it's like Batman is kind of chasing Catwoman, but really slowly. He's basically just walking after her. And like, you know, Batman's got all his little grappling hooks and stuff, but he's just climbing up this ladder, you know, he's climbing up this fire escape.
Yeah, maybe it was part just that Keaton was like, those stunts, you know, they really took it out of me last time.
Yeah, exactly.
But I guess I'll take this stepladder. That's the amount of effort I'm putting in. Just overall, it adds to the thought that, you know, Keaton kind of ends up being the third lead in this movie.
Yeah, very. You could even say fourth behind Shrek, really. But I mean, you don't see Batman until 40 minutes into this movie, and he's really only got three scenes. But of course, so Batman finally makes it to the roof where the Snow Princess is kind of standing up there on a ledge, and they kind of think, oh, hey, okay, well, this is, you know, maybe you're standing a little close to the edge, but we're okay. And then Penguin comes out, and I love the lawn dart. He just throws the umbrella. And I that also seems like a DeVito, like, I'm just throwing this in there.
I think he just was, it was just him, you know, because he's a comedic guy first, so I think that improv comes more naturally to comedic actors. You know, they have that little bit of witticism, and when he's given the chance to be the ridiculousness of the Penguin, he really commits.
He just ate it up. So the bats fly out of the umbrella. The Snow Princess falls to her death right in the square. Everybody looks up and is, oh my God, Batwoman must have killed that girl. I'll say Batman doesn't help his case by like dramatically flying over and through all the bats that are flying around.
Yeah, just making sure that everyone sees him in like a 3-mile radius, just to make sure that scene's connected.
Yeah, you could have just slipped away into the shadows, but no, got to make a big grand exit. And then Penguin basically like it's the most like, you were giving me the signals. What the hell? You know, like I thought I was getting some tonight, and like he just, flips like a switch. That's what I was going for. And then like hooks his little flying umbrella to Catwoman, which like I didn't remember this scene at all from before. I was like, I don't remember Catwoman flying around. And then of course she ends up falling off into the greenhouse, but
another death, another life down.
And an awesome scream, the way she just blows out all the glass in that greenhouse.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Let's see what's next. The Penguin returns to his trailer where he has this little like mini Batmobile, and not just like a facsimile to steer with, but it's like the outside the grocery store little kid cart, you know, you put the quarter in.
Yeah, the rocket ship that you get to ride in, a little back and forth in, and yet he's got his whole control set up.
And I laugh.
Again, whoever his tech guy is doing just a fantastic job.
Yeah, like, hey, Penguin, you sure? I mean, we can just, you know, put the steering wheel or something. No!
Yeah, I need a whole toy for me to sit in.
And he is loving it, too. He's shaking back and forth, and just DeVito is just having so much fun.
The weird imagery thing, because it kind of seems like he's going back and forth from these like really adult moments until, and then he's like scenes like that. It's like Burton's trying to make him look like a kid, like he's never really grown up. you know, and
it's weird to have that with all the sex stuff.
Yeah, the sex stuff really throws me off more because of that. Yeah. Like the DeVito, that's why another reason I think it's mainly DeVito improv throwing in the dirty jokes. But yeah,
I think there's a little bit of Burton. There's too many of them for it to be all DeVito.
All DeVito.
I think Burton's got a little bit of a. Yeah, exactly. Though I will say, there's a lot of destruction in this sequence, but it's mostly just cars getting fender benders and stuff. So Penguin's big plan to cause chaos, like, I mean,
to turn the city against Batman.
Yeah, it was kind of a. Not much to it, really. Like I said, few fender benders, you know, Geico's making a killing off of this, but that's about it. But fortunately, Batman thinks fast and puts a good old-fashioned Memorex CDR into the stereo as he's driving along. Batman, little known fact, Batman had the first CD burner, and it was in his car.
So, you just gotta wonder, what his that first track of his Pump Up to Fight Crime mix was. Yes, you know?
Yes. The remix he will be dropping a little later in the film.
I got money on NWA. I bet he was a West Coast guy, even though Gotham City seems East Coast. I think he's gonna surprise you.
Yeah, you know, Batman does seem kind of like a fuck the police kind of guy.
it's the weird line.
Batman listening to Death Row Records.
Just headbanging on the way to go fight the Joker. Let's do this.
Oh, man. It's hard to recover from. I'm going to have that image in my head for a few days now. but fortunately, Batman gains control of the Batmobile just in time to avoid hitting a little old lady. And then he's basically just running from the cops at that point, which is this is where he does the little, like, I'm going to make my Batmobile real skinny so it can drive down this alley. Even as a kid, I thought that was kind of a weak, like, trick, you know?
It's tough, you know? I forgive conservation of mass when I'm watching Transformers movies, but, you know, the Batman one, it didn't work. This is a Willy Wonka kind of scene.
Yeah, Willy Wonka, yeah, very much so.
Tim Burton ruins that movie later.
About 15 years and he'll
15 years down the road. But it's just a weird getaway.
Even weirder after he goes through the alley and then he's back on a street as the skinny little hot dog car.
And he just kind of turned it normally. Yes. And it's just like pulls into traffic like, we're fine. It's okay.
Such a weird deal. And at that point, Batman's just like, fuck this, I'm out of here. He just drives out of the city, goes home.
Yeah. Sorry. Let's have another 40 minutes of everyone else talking, and then Keaton will come back for the last fight.
Yes, pretty much. let's see. So Bruce, I did like the little moment where he's talking to Alfred. This is where they're talking a little shit about letting Vicky Vale into the Batcave. And he does the little reach into the fish tank to open the thing and then gets in this little torture cabinet to go down the slide. Man, I thought that was cool as a kid.
Is there anything you wanted more as a 10-year-old than a secret bookcase that moves?
Oh, man. I still want it.
It could have just had Legos in it, and I would have been the happiest person on the planet. I didn't even need the rest of the Batcave. I just need the secret door.
And, of course, this is where Mixmaster Bruce and DJ Alfred drop the hot remix and give basically the people of Gotham all the Penguin's real thoughts about how they're, you know, just garbage people, which is like... All right, you've seen this guy bite somebody's nose off and molest women and, you know, black bile dripping out of his mouth. But, oh, man, they got him on tape saying he doesn't like the people of Gotham.
Yeah. Listen, before he respected us, he may have bit us, but there was respect. And now that he's talked poorly about our social situations, now I'm upset.
Which this is sort of just coming to me off the top of my head here, but... a little bit of Access Hollywood tape, Billy Bush grabbing by the from a few years ago. Coming back
That's what burns you. That's what burns you. You gotta watch out what you say behind the scenes.
And then Penguin gets up on the mic and says, "It's just locker room talk."
It's fine.
The people of Gotham do not buy it. And this just cracks me up. the people turn on Penguin, and so he basically just starts shooting at the crowd and then runs off and dives in a sewer. Which I just imagine like any politician today actually doing, like if they turned on him, you know, Ted Cruz or somebody, just being like, guys.
Yeah, I'd love to see Nancy Pelosi go off in an umbrella just floating away from the Capitol building, right? Like, just grabs an umbrella and people be like, I knew it the whole time.
I knew she had the umbrella lobby in her pocket.
Yeah, exactly. Where's that technology for the everyday traveler?
Yeah. And this was weird because it really feels like at this point in the movie, you're like, okay, we're wrapping up. And then it kind of slows down for a minute. We've got to go to the Christmas ball or whatever.
Yeah, this is kind of just a weird scene in what felt like we were right at a climactic point, and then all of a sudden it's going to take a pause. You can read in some of the other reviews, if you see old reviews about it, that this was one of the big problems with the movie in terms of pacing.
They didn't know what to do with the third act.
Yeah, it just really got chopped up, and every time it was about to really hit a good speed, they threw another roadblock in, another stop, another chat.
Yeah, and I mean, the only function of this scene is for Shrek to get kidnapped by the Penguin again, yeah. So I don't know that we really needed a ball scene for it. Though I do have to note, this early 90s saxophone band playing Super Freak on saxophone at this party.
You know, it's quality.
But you know Tim Burton was like, well, yeah, I mean, it's a movie about these freaks, right? So we got to play Super Freak at the
Super
party.
Freak,
yeah.
Nailed it.
Deep cut.
Deep cut. I love the Easter egg, baby.
But yeah, I mean,
the kidnapping comes into one of my other favorite lines, one of my other favorite comedic lines, mm-hmm. just because it's the reference to the animated series that was going on and the comic book too, is when we get just after this, I think, is when Penguin shows it looks like the hypnosis umbrella to Max Shrek.
Oh, right.
He's got the spinning circle and Christopher Walken. Shrek is like, what is that supposed to do? Hypnotize you? And Danny DeVito's like, no, it just gives you a splitting headache. I just like the making fun of the comic book there. Yeah. That one makes me laugh.
A lot of great umbrella gags here. Just to skip to the last one on his dying breath, he pulls one out and is like, I picked a cute one. I love that. His last line of the movie. I picked a cute one. But yeah, then we're like, it's such a, I feel like we fast forwarded through half of the final scene. It's like we kidnap Shrek and then we're kind of into it at the end. You know, the March of the Penguins is on. They're all marching down to Gotham Square while Batman's in his little bat boat. And Alfred, meanwhile, is jamming the Penguin signal once again. So all the Penguins return to cinder, basically. And, you know, this is the second scene in about 20 minutes where the critical plot is like signal jamming. You know, kind of a weird flex for a 1992 superhero movie.
Yeah, technology that no one really understood. So I feel like they felt like they could just say whatever. It's like whenever you see computer hacking in a movie and it has nothing to do with what actually happens when people hack computers.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And so just because people don't actually understand, like radio waves, you don't know what's happening there. So we stop them.
Yeah. They just put jamming in progress up on the screen. Yeah. And you're like, yeah, okay, sure. Meanwhile, Alfred's down there with his big old headphones on. Oh, Master Wayne is just recording my podcast.
Yeah. You know, Batman's tech guy, Alfred was doing better than whatever the large clown with the monkey.
Oh, he's
I think those are the guys. Those are the guys competing.
Please like and subscribe to my podcast. Thank you, fucking Alfred. And then so we get Batman. Basically, so I love it when Danny DeVito hops in his little rubber ducky car.
Yeah, the rubber ducky is just fantastic.
And he's like driving up the steps and DeVito's bouncing around in that thing.
It's one of those where it's like, is he a grown child? This is like what a kid would be like that's getting pulled in a red wagon.
And Batman basically just like crashes into him with his little bat boat. Is there a name for that thing, the bat boat?
I think it's just the bat boat.
Okay, we'll go with that. It's kind of a boat, kind of a jet ski, kind of a, something like
that. That ship sounds a little bit too much like Guano, so I think they don't want to go that way. You know, the bat boat is fine. It's another toy they wanted to sell.
And meanwhile, Alfred's cleaning up bat shit in the bat cave. Oh, Master Wayne, I thought you said you wanted bat shit, not bat ship.
Damn it. it's fantastic fertilizer for the northern hedges.
So we get to kind of the weird little fight between Batman and the Penguin, but it's not really a fight. I mean, Batman kind of just stands back, which I think was like probably a smart choice on the movie's part. Cause if you've got Michael Keaton, like beating the shit out of Danny DeVito, I think.
It's not really, especially with everything you've done to kind of build him up as a sympathetic character, like beating the overgrown baby would not go over well. They could have brought in some action. He could have had two giant guys that had, you know, penguin suits and they're in tuxedos and been like, fight my penguin suits or something. I don't know.
See, that's what I want to know at this point. Where's all the Red Triangle guys gone? Like, all the goons are gone.
Yeah, he apparently he fired him and hired the animal labor union was a lot cheaper than hiring more Red Triangle guys.
Well, and I guess, you know, he sent them all out in that creepy, like, train to go steal all the kids from Gotham, but then Batman, you know, saves the kids or whatever. And so, yeah, I guess Penguin's just like, I cannot trust you guys with anything. You're all fired. Which apparently Burton, like, was trying to set up to shoot more disturbing shit in that scene. Like, you basically see the kids in this little train thing, right? But Burton wanted to shoot scenes of, like, kids being taken out of their beds by these creepy circus clowns.
Like, scarring young actors is what he was going for.
Yes, and every small child who ever watched the movie. I mean, you know, I got enough heebie-jeebies from the clowns as is.
Yeah, but I feel like that they, you know, they had to keep it to a PG-13 rating because of, I mean, they wanted it to be a summer blockbuster, and you can't make a summer blockbuster that's an R.
Right.
So maybe that saved us from having to watch those little details.
Yeah, probably. So all the penguins come back, and Batman basically makes the penguins, like, blow up the zoo. Penguin falls through the ceiling into the penguin tank, I guess. And it's basically just like, hey, we need 5 minutes of Catwoman. Penguin, go drown for a minute. We'll be back to you in just a few minutes.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah, we got to finish off this Catwoman story. Yeah,
we're bouncing back and forth here, Penguin. Just, we need to sideline you for a minute. For some reason, the monkey decides to save Shrek by giving him the keys, and so Shrek just gets out of the cage.
Hey, he's right. Everything works out for Max Shrek, all right?
It really does.
For a reason.
Even when he falls into the tank, and this is another one of those scarring things for me as a kid, the shot of the dead clown at the bottom of the swimming pool, basically, was just like, because, you know, the guy's been there for like 3 or 4 days, you know? It's just, it's kind of,
it's a little bloated. It's a little, what am I looking at?
Yeah, but luckily for Shrek, the guy had a pistol, so Shrek scoops it up. And then Catwoman shows up basically to take her revenge on Shrek. And this is where she's basically like, go ahead, I got 7 lives left or whatever. And he shoots her 1, 2, 3, 4. And she counts each of those bullet shots off like it's a life.
Yep.
You know, not a wound. You know, it's like, well, you didn't die. So it's not a, you know, that's not how it works.
Maybe, I mean, we don't know. We haven't really had it explained. The magic cat saliva did not come with an information pamphlet.
And she's just like, well, I'm going to save one for next Christmas. I don't really know what that's about, but okay. I also thought it was interesting. They didn't like put squibs on Michelle Pfeiffer or anything. She just like physically reacts as if she'd been shot. And it's like maybe the most Adam West Batman thing of these Tim Burton movies is her just like pretending to be shot.
Yeah. You wonder, like, did they try squibs and it just not show the black leather and, like, cold seat or something? And so they just went with it.
Just went with it, or who knows?
I don't know why they wouldn't have done a little bit more.
And Batman, you know, he's talking her down, saying, hey, we're the same. So never noticed this as a kid, but it freaked me out this time. You get Bruce talking to Catwoman, and then you get a cut back to Bruce, and all of a sudden his eye black's gone under his mask, right? So all of a sudden after the whole, you get this shot of Bruce looking really weird in the, like, he looks like he's cosplaying as Batman all of a sudden.
Yep.
And of course this is all just so he can, you know, rip the cowl off.
Yeah.
But, you know, just what's wrong with having him have some eye black in that scene with the thing off? No, you got to have Michael Keaton, you know, pretty face, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it definitely breaks your concentration as a viewer once you see it now.
I always thought it was really weird how the cowl kind of tears off, like it's like this weird kind of foam rubber thing, you know?
Yeah, it's not protective at that point, so no. I guess that's head stuff's all disguise. Go for the head, guys.
Yeah, really
punch him in the face. I don't think it's doing much.
Doesn't seem to be armored. You know, earlier in the movie, Catwoman's like trying to find the soft spots, and I'm like, well, it's all just rubber, you know? I mean,
I think those nails will get through it.
It's not Kevlar or anything like that. I do love the bit where Max Schreck is like, Bruce Wayne? What are you doing dressed up as Batman?
and then Michelle Pfeiffer responds, because he is Batman, you idiot.
And it's just a real, like, really? Really, Max? You couldn't have put those pieces together, bud?
Yeah, I figured it out.
So
he probably was the one that got paid to make the bat light shine into Wayne Manor. Yes. Didn't figure it out.
So Selena Kyle electro kisses Shrek. I don't really know what's going on here. She's got the little taser thing that she like shoves in his mouth, but she's also like grabbing a power line above her, and the whole thing just starts blowing to shit. But yeah, that's the death of Max Shrek. We get a little crispy critter skeleton with its eyeball still intact once all the flames are put out. But the final crowning achievement of this film, the penguin pallbearers.
Yes.
My God. This creeped me out as a kid, and I think I realized what is so creepy about it is that they're not penguins. They're kids in foam suits.
Penguin suits,
for
yeah.
That last scene.
You can feel the difference in their movement. Yeah. It does not look penguin-like.
And I never noticed before, like I said, Penguin just croaks after, you know, he's reaching for another umbrella, gets the cute one, and then just does the fucking face plant. Just face plant.
Sets his face into the cement.
So, but then when the penguins come out, they're like, they're not like, they're not touching him. They basically just like walk beside him as, I'm like.
And he kind of slides along.
Yeah. Like, are they pushing him? I don't know what's going on here, but.
I don't know what's happening either. Is he naturally slidey because he's a penguin on the ice. So he just kind of, his
that
body
black
knows where
goo
to go.
Really lubricated the slide there.
Yeah. That stuff's all over at this point. It's not good.
He definitely
took an extra big squirt at that final scene too, for it to be all coming out.
Oh yeah. They make a point to show it like blackening the water.
Yeah. Under him. Yeah.
Which is a great little effect. Weird note to end on, though, because at this point you're kind of like, oh, poor penguin, you know, like, why are you making this kind of mournful Viking?
There's no moment of pathos for us in this one, in the sequel here. There's no finishing touch for Batman.
And I was surprised how quickly it really wraps up. I mean, we jump from this, no reveal of Selena here. Then we just jump to basically the final scene, which is Alfred driving sad Bruce around town on Christmas Eve or whatever. And this was actually originally supposed to be the final bit of the film. You know, he thinks he sees Catwoman, picks up a stray cat, but no Selena. And then he gets in the car and he and Alfred say Merry Christmas, and that was it. But test audiences were like, so what happened to Catwoman?
Yeah.
So they were like, well, shit, we got to throw something in there.
As we would have been. We would have been furious if that was what they gave us.
Actually, yeah, I would have been. Yeah, yeah. Even my little 8-year-old self or whatever would have been like, wait, what? So did she die or what? I don't understand.
Yeah, I need to know what happened.
So apparently they, after the fact, were like, okay, we need to throw in a shot of, you know, Catwoman over Gotham. But they could not get Michelle Pfeiffer back for it. She'd already gone on to her next movie. Apparently they tried to get the shot by using like a body double, but something about the fact that the, you know, the skin tied suit, you know, you could really tell that like, it's not Michelle's, you know, kind of neck head kind of structure.
Interesting.
So they resorted to building an animatronic Michelle Pfeiffer head just for that little shot.
To pick up and look at the bat signal in the sky.
And I got to tell you, they got it. I didn't. Yeah, I would have never known.
I wouldn't have known.
Never.
I wouldn't have known.
Yeah, it looked like Michelle Pfeiffer to me. But yeah, so they finished that up with the animatronic. That is Batman Returns. Cousin, anything else we need to hit for this one? I kind of breezed through most of my categories here.
You know, just looking back, you know, I think we're both on the penguin for Ham, you know, is good.
Yeah.
Good Danny DeVito. There wasn't really any actor in the side that I thought, wow, look at that guy.
So I've got one for you on the, look who it is. I didn't know they were in this. You know who Doug Jones is?
I don't.
Okay. So he's one of these actors that you've probably seen in a bunch of movies, but never actually seen his face. Cause he's like the king of prosthetics. He does all the Guillermo del Toro stuff. He was the Shape of Water fish, and he was Abe Sapien in the Hellboys. Yeah, and
great movies.
I just had to shout. He's, you know, very tall and thin, so he's like, he plays a lot of alien kind of creatures and stuff.
Sure.
But I just had to shout him out because I just dove into Star Trek Discovery for the first time, and he's got a big role.
Oh, dude. Yeah, you're gonna love that.
Yeah, I'm about 2.5 seasons in, but he plays Saru, kind of the big alien commander.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, he's great.
Yeah, so this was kind of his first little role. He's one of the Triangle Gang. He's the guy that kind of rigs the bomb on the Batmobile. But yeah, that's about
it. Gotcha. That one.
All right, so we are going to rank all these Batman movies as we go through them, but as this is only our second Batman film, how would you compare this to Batman 89, cousin? I know you weren't on our original Batman 89 episode, so I don't know if you've seen it in a while. How do you rank
them? I did, just because we were doing this. I sat down and watched that one before I watched this one, just so they were both fresh in my mind. And I think when ranking superhero movies, it almost always comes down to the villain for me, because I always enjoy the superhero. Keaton is a very good Batman. You can have a superhero who's bad enough to ruin a movie.
Oh, yeah.
But it's very hard for them to be the one that makes the movie. The villain does.
That's a good philosophy.
Yeah. It's just generally what ends up happening when I'm ranking all of our wonderful MCU and DC EU movies. And I will take the Joker over Catwoman and Danny DeVito.
Oh,
Jack
really?
Nicholson's Joker. We talked a lot about, you know, the third act had some pacing issues.
Yeah.
Tim Burton, who I love as a director, and this is probably my third favorite of his movies behind Beetlejuice and Nightmare Before Christmas. But it's just not enough Batman for me in this film.
I'll give you
where we talked, you know, Keaton's not the centerfold. We had a movie that was about the evil capitalist and and Danny DeVito and the secretary that gets really cool. Catwoman was amazing. I think she's fantastic.
Yeah.
And I love Danny DeVito for what it is. But if you're going to make me pick which one to watch between the two, I'll go watch Jack Nicholson destroy an art gallery again instead of the kids getting kidnapped, I think.
I think I'm going to, it's probably recency bias, I think I'm actually going to go Returns a little bit higher just because it's so much more Burton-y.
It is.
The first one has a little bit of the Burton, but there's also these kind of long stretches with, you know, Vicki Vale and Robert Wool and all that. So I don't know. I just, something about this one for me, combination of it being kind of a Christmas flick for me. I also think the score is a little better on this one. You know, Danny Elfman.
Yeah, Danny Elfman gets celebrated again. He nails it.
But in the first one, it was like the theme itself was so distinctive. But then you had like the prints and shit like that throughout a lot of the movie. This one, it's just the Elfman strings like on 10 the whole movie. Very creepy vibe to all that.
Yeah, I think it's completely reasonable to be like, I like this one better as a movie and as a Tim Burton film, but it's me as a comic book fan before I'm a fan of the movies comes into it. And so there's these little differences that I didn't like his choices, and they just hold it down a little bit, even though I see great parts in the movie and still love it. It's not a difference of like, I'm giving one a 10 and one a 5 here.
It's kind of hard to separate these two, really. I think these two Batmans may be most, like, the Schumachers you can kind of separate, but these are of a piece, I think.
Yes, absolutely.
So last question for you, cousin. Would you recommend this movie to someone who has never seen it as they get ready to prepare for The Batman coming to theaters this March?
Absolutely. Especially the darker tone that it looks like the new Batman is going to be taking. I feel like there's going to be a lot of callback. And then, you know, we're also talking about The Flash and Batgirl. They're supposed to have Michael Keaton being brought back to the universe. And, you know, I think everyone absolutely adored how Spider-Man did it, bringing everyone back together.
Oh, yeah.
DC is once again on their copycat train to try and get the same deal. But
oh, yes.
You'll like it a lot more.
Get ready for that the next couple of years.
Keaton fighting Catwoman and their repartee is worth seeing.
Though, I think they'll have a little bit more trouble. Spider-Man was able to get old Toby and Andrew back. You know, Val Kilmer not doing so well health wise. Yeah. I don't think George Clooney's likely to put on
that. I don't think anyone
suit.
Wants George Clooney to come back.
Even Christian Bale, I think you'd have a hard time getting him to do it again. But all it takes is time, so you never know.
You know, everybody's got a number. That's how much is your time worth?
Exactly. All right, cuz, any final thoughts on Batman Returns?
Oh man, I'm excited to go into the next one. It's a 360 degree turn going into the Schumacher verse as opposed to
Tim Burton.
You know, and the characters, the actors, everything is going to be very different for the next one. It's going to be very different. I think even our conversation will have a different tone.
Oh, very much so. It's not Burton. It's a very, very different thing. We got some Jim Carrey to talk about, some Tommy Lee Jones, a little Chase Meridian action. Definitely.
The Robin comes into the fray, and they chose the glass of warm milk that is Chris O'Donnell.
Warm milk? I think it's like lukewarm milk at best.
It might be at best. Yeah, it certainly puts me to sleep. I can say that.
Yeah.
But just a preview for the next issue.
Well, friends, that's Back to the Spoilers for 1992's Batman Returns. Join us next week for Batman Forever right here on Spoilery Radio. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Spoiler Wars Pod. My name is Mason Fields. Until next time, stay spoilery, everybody.